All right, so we started this study group in January of 2012, and today is mid-April 2015. So we've been doing this for 3 1/4 years, and we're now ready for the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter 1. And sometimes during Revelation I will be reading from the Bible. I don't know if I need to today, but I did bring a Bible with me so that when we're prompted to, I can do that, because you'll understand it better in NTI if you also look at the Bible. They're heavily related. So starting with Revelation chapter 1. The time is at hand. All that you need to accept the truth of you is with you and within you now. There can be nothing that you lack for which you must ask. It has been given, and so you have it with you fully now. And as the scribe, I really understood this. You know, I think there is a truth that we always have it with us. But as the scribe, I understood that that NTI was coming to an end, and that Holy Spirit was really telling me, there's nothing else for me to tell you. I've given you everything. Everything you need to know is here in NTI as we're wrapping it up. That's the way that I understood that paragraph. The world is an illusion. And so everything you experience as you let go of the world is illusion also. You are not to believe any of it. But helpful symbols will be given to guide you. Remember that they are only symbols. Follow them, realizing you know not where they lead. Well, this is kind of funny because Francine brought something to my mind just before the recording started. And it's a perfect example of this. I said I hadn't told this story to anyone. Now I'm fixing to tell it to everyone. But I was in a minor surgery with a local anesthesia when I was asked to hold very, very still. And so I thought the best way to hold very, very still would be to meditate. So I went into meditation. And during that meditation, I was joined with what really felt like the presence of Jesus and Ramana. And in fact, I was so enveloped in love. It was just this incredible, blissful experience. It could have gone on forever, and I would have been, you know, fine with that. It was just a magnificent experience. So I've never really told anybody that until tonight, except Francine knew, because she was the one that drove me home from the hospital. So she saw the look on my face, and I needed to give her an explanation. So she knew, but nobody else knew. The reason I've never told that story is because I know people make things like that special. And I didn't want to add to that. I didn't want to add to that with another story. So I just kept it to myself. And in fact, I don't even think about it. Like, I also let it go myself. In the very beginning of a spiritual path, it can be very, very helpful to hold some experiences as special, whether they're my experience or whether they're someone else's experience, because we're kind of crossing over from believing in a world into believing in something beyond the world. But at some point, we need to cross again. And when we cross again, take another step forward, we want to leave behind all belief, which means beliefs in descended masters, beliefs in, like this Ramana and Jesus that were holding me during a surgery, the belief in the inner Ramana that gave me the book that we're going to be studying next, or the belief in the Holy Spirit that gave me this book. All of these beliefs have to at some time be let go, because even though they're helpful for a time, and they need to be embraced while they are helpful, it's almost as if you're always holding on to Santa Claus, and so you're never maturing. And so at some point, all of these things need to be let go as well, because they are also within the dream, within the illusion. What they are is the manifestation of right-minded thoughts, where a lot of things within the dream or within the illusion are the manifestation of wrong-minded thoughts, right? But they're no more real than any other manifestation. And so what this is saying, then, if we look back at verses 4 and 5, the world is an illusion. And so everything you experience as you let go of the world is illusion also. You are not to believe any of it. And the reason that's in italics, it was emphasized, but the reason it was emphasized is because what Holy Spirit was really saying is, I'm not just asking you not to believe the wrong mind anymore. I'm also now asking you not to believe the right mind. We're going to transcend all of that. We're going beyond belief entirely. So you are not to believe any of it. But helpful symbols will be given to guide you. Remember that they are only symbols. Follow them, realizing you know not where they lead. So a good, you know, just imaginary example of this is, let's imagine that you are in a dream, you know, in your bed at night, and you're having a dream, and in your dream, you are lost in the woods, and you can't find your way out of the woods, and you're very, very scared, and suddenly an angel appears. And the angel says, oh, come on, follow me. I can take you out of the woods. And so you follow that angel. And she takes you all the way to the border of the woods where you can see your house. And now you know where you're at. And you turn around to say thank you, and she's gone. You see, she's not needed anymore. So she just vanishes. That's really what this is saying. You will be given these manifestations, which may even appear real. Like, Regina did not make up the Holy Spirit that she heard when she wrote this book. That was a very real experience. There was a Regina who in a very honest way was hearing a channeling from a Holy Spirit and writing the book. Like, she didn't lie about that. But that's like this angel in this dream I just told you about that can just disappear when it's no longer needed. It is a manifestation of the right mind. It's just as temporary and just as illusory as everything else in the world. The difference is this one's leading you out of the woods. So you follow it for as long as it's helpful, but when it comes time to let it go, you let it go. You say, ah, I see where I'm at. Thank you. You know, thank you. I see where I'm at now. And you go from there.
I just, with the contemplation, and now that I'm starting to hear Holy Spirit, sometimes I feel special because of that. Yeah. I just feel very excited that I can. And sometimes the ego wants to take that. And so I've been asking for humility, and yes. But again, that's an experience, right?
Well, I mean, I certainly, when I first started hearing the Holy Spirit, I felt special too. And, you know, Adyashanti, you know, as far as I know, never had that type of experience, but he had an awakening mm-hmm. experience, and his awakening experience, he felt special at first. You know, so, and he talks about how he would sit in meditation and look at these thoughts. He'd be in meditation with a bunch of other Buddhists at the time, and he'd have these thoughts that would show up that, you know, I'm more enlightened than them, which maybe was even partially true. Yeah, I'm more enlightened than them. I get it, they don't. I don't remember all of his thoughts. But he would just sit and watch them, mm-hmm. you know, because he knew he needed to transcend that sense of specialness.
Yeah.
So I would say that that's very, very normal.
Yeah.
And it needs to be let go.
Right.
The mistake is falling for it, which obviously right. some people do.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So certainly when you start to have those kinds of breakthroughs, the idea I'm special, that would be like the ego's offering.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to hear Holy Spirit,
I understand.
Please thank you're special for it.
Right.
You know, it's the ego's offering. So, but yeah, I think it's very, very normal. All right, so the world is an illusion. And so everything you experience as you let go of the world is illusion also. You are not to believe any of it. But helpful symbols will be given to guide you. Remember that they are only symbols. Follow them, realizing you know not where they lead. Do not idolize anything within the world or any symbol or any thought that is sent to lead you from the world. Hold to them as they are useful, but let them go when their usefulness has passed. You are to keep moving by letting go until you find yourself with nothing left to hold on to. So in the dream that I was talking about, the angel that led us to the edge of the woods, and then when we could see our house, she disappeared. The mistake would then be to build a shrine to her there and, mm-hmm. you know, right? And tell everybody this angel has, you know, brought me from the woods and, you know, and make a big deal out of it. That would be a mistake. This is telling us, in the end, and by the end I mean the end of the false self, in the end, we have to let go of everything. Even the things that were the most helpful of all. You know, even if it doesn't matter if our teacher is in form, or if our teacher was an inner teacher, or if our teacher was a book like NTI or A Course in Miracles, you know, we may have gratitude for that teacher. I think that's perfectly normal. But we need to let go of that teacher too. If there's anything that we're clinging to, anything that we're idolizing, what we're really doing is holding on to the world. That's what we're doing. This is one of my favorite sentences in NTI. You are to keep moving by letting go. Excuse me. Okay. You are to keep moving by letting go until you find yourself with nothing left to hold on to. I think that's a very clear sentence. I love that sentence. Look and see what you shall see. Know that it comes to you like passing clouds, but it comes on the wings of heaven so that you can let it go. Nothing within the world comes to you for any other purpose. Nothing within the experience of the world is to be held to. It is all given that you may look at it and choose to let it go. Now, as the scribe, when the previous two paragraphs were coming, I was very, very clear. We were talking about things like Jesus, Holy Spirit. I didn't know Ramana yet, but, you know, eventually Ramana. I knew that these were the types of things I was being told to follow but not hold on to, right? When this paragraph came with verse 7, what was coming back into it now, back into the mix, were the darker clouds. So, you know, a situation of a friend, for some reason, misunderstanding me so much that she never wants to have anything to do with me again. Okay, that is coming on the wings of heaven so that I can let it go, whatever in me is brought up by the circumstance. So I understood now that not only are the symbols, like the Ramanas, the Jesuses, the Holy Spirits, not only are they coming on the wings of heaven, but also these circumstances that we would judge as bad, they're also on the wings of heaven, just like those symbols are, also so that we can let them go. In fact, what NTI Revelation 1 is really emphasizing is that our only job is letting go, letting go, letting go, again, until we're left with nothing to hold on to. Verse 8, I am the Alpha and the Omega, who is and who was and who is to come. So this is Holy Spirit now kind of announcing I am, but the I am here also applies to us, right? It's not like there's a divine being that's saying I am and the reader is not the I am. We are all that I am. I am the Alpha and the Omega, who is and who was and who is to come. But the reason it's Holy Spirit announcing it is because the part of us that is Holy Spirit is the I am, not the part of us that is the ego. Right? So now sentence 2. Keep this thought, again, the I am, the Alpha and the Omega. Keep this thought within the mind as temptations come to tell you that you are not. Stay firm with your heart in trust and say no to all that is a lie by remembering it is not so. So this is asking us now to focus on the I am as who I am, right? And, you know, if an idea comes in, oh, I'm getting so old, look at these wrinkles, you know, pretty soon I'm going to be, you know, an old woman. No. No, I'm not going to be an old woman. I am the Alpha and the Omega, right? The one who is and who was and who is to come, right? So whenever a thought comes into the mind to try and tell us that we are the false self, Holy Spirit is saying, no, I am the Alpha and Omega, and just keep proclaiming who you are. And that's not a whole lot different. Sorry, I have a cold if you hadn't noticed. That's not a whole lot different than the teachings of Nisargadatta Maharaj, who taught that all you need to do to awaken is to focus on the I Am presence. This is really NTI's way of saying, every time a thought comes into your mind that's convincing you that you're, you know, you're Francine or you're Priscilla or you're Dan or you're Regina, you say, no, I'm the Alpha and the Omega. You know, I am. You know, every time a thought comes in your mind to tell you that you're a victim, you're being rejected, you're being used, no, I am the Alpha and Omega. And if you were to practice that, you would continually be focusing on the I Am presence. Because you're saying no to any other idea that might define you in some way. Sentence 4. If you do not believe that which is not truth, you shall experience truth. But if you choose to believe the false is the truth about you, you shall experience the false and believe it is true. So if I have a friend who misunderstands something I say, but then she takes it so seriously, she's like, I never want to have anything to do with you again. And I see myself as the misunderstood victim, then I'm going to experience myself as the misunderstood victim, and I'm going to believe I am the misunderstood victim. It's not true, but that's going to be my experience. But if the idea comes up that I'm the misunderstood victim, and I say, no, I am the Alpha and the Omega, you know, then I don't have to have that experience. I may still have a friend that doesn't speak to me anymore. I mean, that may happen. That's her choice. But I don't have the experience of being a misunderstood victim. I have the experience of being a friend who's letting a friend go her own way, believe what she wants to believe, and loving her anyway. You know, and if she ever comes back, great, I'm still here. So I have the experience of that rather than the experience of being the misunderstood victim. So again, our job is to not believe that which is not truth. It kind of reminds me of Jesus, when Jesus was before the Sanhedrin, just shortly before his crucifixion. You know, he was charged with all kinds of things. They said they brought in all kinds of false witnesses, and Jesus stood there and didn't say a thing. He didn't defend himself once. The only time he spoke was when they asked him a question that was true. Are you the Son of God? Yes. You know, because that was true. Yes, yes. So he didn't get involved in the not truth at all. He didn't believe the not truth enough to even comment on it. Right? He only responded to thoughts of truth. So that's what we're being asked to do, is not believe that which is not truth. And that's how we set ourselves free. Verses 9 to 11. Guidance comes to you for one purpose, and that is to lead you from the world. There may also seem to be another purpose, which is happiness within the world. The two purposes are not the same. Do not be fooled by the similarities in their sound. One purpose leads to death, while the other most surely leads to life and knowledge of life. So this is a very, very easy confusion for a lot of people. A lot of people believe that the purpose of guidance is to make me happy in the world. So, for example, if I want a romantic relationship, I think guidance is telling me to sign up for this dating site, and guidance is saying, pick that guy, and guidance, you know, or if I want money, I think guidance is telling me to go look at this job, or, you know, whatever I want, I think guidance is telling me that. That's just my own thinking. You know, I mean, it's playing along. Sure, that's what it does. You know, that's not guidance. Guidance doesn't have the job of making us happy in the world. In the end, that's what happens. We become happy with anything. Therefore, you could say we're happy in the world. But guidance isn't here to give us what the false personality thinks it wants. Because if guidance was giving us what the false personality thinks it wants, it would be reinforcing for us that I am the false personality, you know, with those values and those desires. And guidance isn't going to do that. Guidance is here to awaken us. And so it's saying, just don't be confused on this point, and then you won't be going around believing all of your own thinking, you know, to be guidance. Realize that guidance has one purpose only, and that's to awaken you. That's the only purpose that true guidance has. Verses 12 to 16. All things within the world are the same. There is nothing special in any of it. Every experience can be used to lead to life, and every experience can also lead to death. This is the double-edged sword of the spiritual path. It may lead you to the life you seek, or it may lead you to stay busy as you work very hard going nowhere. Only you can know what this path is for you. I think that, I mean, I guess I don't really know. I think that probably, this is a wild guess, that probably most people get started on the spiritual path from what I would call a very sincere desire. But, you know, the ego is pretty good at hijacking that desire. Pretty soon maybe specialness shows up, so then the spiritual path becomes about being special, you know? A special one who can foretell the future, or the special one who can hear the Holy Spirit for others, or the special one who can heal, or, you know, whatever. You know, I think that it also can also become, for a lot of people, believe it or not, it becomes a social network. You know, lots and lots of friends. You meet lots and lots of people on the spiritual path. Most adults, you know, have very limited, I think, social circles. And when you're on the spiritual path, you can have a very large social circle. And for an extrovert, that can be very exciting. And, you know, I'm sure there's lots of ways that the ego hijacks the spiritual path. But what this is pointing out is that the spiritual path can become just another path of our ego identity. Like, there's nothing special about the spiritual path. The fact that you're on the spiritual path does not mean that you're going to awaken. You can spend a long, long time, probably many, many, many lifetimes, being identified with your spiritual path. And so it wants to make sure that we're aware of that, so that we can constantly, in a non-judgmental way, be checking ourselves and make sure that we aren't being attracted to the spiritual path for an egotistical way. Excuse me for a second. Let me get a drink. Check within ourselves to make sure that we really are still kind of moving forward, you know, and letting go as we go along, instead of finding our little groove in the spiritual path and then hanging out here. Because it's what, you know, because we found our spot now. This is where I, you know, am identified, and my groove and my circle and my spiritual function. And, you know, we got to keep moving. And the way that I do that, because, you know, I do have a very spiritual job. And, you know, this is the kind of job that people get stuck in. The way that I do it, actually, is I imagine myself giving it up all the time. I'm always imagining, you know, just imagining giving it up, you know, for various reasons. You know, maybe the donations just quit coming in and it's just clear that it's over, so giving it up because it's over. You know, it ended and I gave it up. Or maybe Ron retires and he wants me to go off and retire with him and I give it up, or, you know, whatever. But the reason I continually imagine myself giving it up is so that I'm not becoming attached, that I'm very aware that this is transitory. You know, maybe I'll be in this job till I'm 97 and I die. Maybe. I mean, that's a possibility. I also have to not fantasize about giving it up, right? I have to be willing to stay here till I die. But I also have to be willing to give it up, either way. And I just play with those ideas in my head to make sure that I'm not attached. You know, my identity isn't here. This is what I'm doing now. Maybe tomorrow I'll be doing something different. If so, fine. Maybe I'll do this till the day I die. If so, fine. But I want to make real sure that this job is not becoming a part of my identity. And again, only I can do that for me. Nobody else could do that for me, right? And so that's what this is saying. Only you can know what this path is for you. Verses 17 to 18. The Christ within is your guide on this muddled and tricky path. By listening only to it shall you find your way. Listen to no other voice as you step carefully with me. Listen only for life and be aware of temptations, which are but the appealing calls of death. I've heard other teachers say this, so I think maybe it's not just my experience. A lot of people think the beginning of the spiritual path is hard. And in a way it is, because you're really learning to act, speak, think in a completely different way than the way you've always been conditioned. And changing the way you act, speak, think It can be very difficult. Lots of times there's lots of fear telling you not to change, that you're going to lose everything that's important to you, so it can be very, very difficult. But after it gets easy, because it does get easy, it gets difficult in another way. It doesn't feel as difficult as it did in the beginning. But the way that it gets difficult is more like, because it's not as challenging, it's easy to get lazy again. I call it resting on your laurels. I think, I don't know where that term comes from. But because it isn't challenging and you aren't having to work so hard and it's become somewhat easy, it gets easy to get lazy. The vigilance that brought you this far, it's easy to kind of forget about it now. And so that's really what this paragraph is kind of saying. You know, this path is, in a way, it's even after it gets easy, it's very, very difficult because the ego is going to be there every step of the way trying to make sure you are too busy or that you think you're special or, you know, anything else to keep you from finishing, right? So you have to make sure that you are listening only to the inner Christ, the Holy Spirit, the heart, the voice of your true desire, whatever you want to call it. You have to make sure you're sticking with that. Because if you don't stick with that, the ego is going to make sure you get lost somewhere along the way, that you delay. You know, whether it's for decades or lifetimes, the ego's purpose is for you to delay. So you're the one that has to make sure that doesn't happen. You can tell we're kind of getting near the end here because look how Holy Spirit is talking to you. You know, right? Verses 19 to 20. You are not alone. You are never alone. You need but remember your true purpose and all that you desire for discernment and guidance shall be given you. This is also important. If I start thinking at some point, you know, I want everybody to know who Regina Dawn Akers is as a spiritual teacher, because, you know, I think I'm actually more clear than other people, and it probably would benefit them if they learn to listen to me, you know, yada, 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 yada. I've just left my true purpose. I now have another purpose. And what do you think is going to happen if I have that purpose? You think I'm going to stay aligned, or you think I'm going to start getting unaligned?
You're not going to be as clear because it's not going to be Spirit speaking through you.
That's right. That's right. And so that's what this is saying. The strongest protection you have against the ego is your true desire. If you remember that really all you want is awakening, I'm willing to lose all of my friends, I'm willing to lose all of my family, I'm willing to lose all of my money, I'm willing to lose my job, I'm willing to move, all I want is awakening. If you can do that and feel it in the heart, especially while you're doing that, you're golden. But as soon as you start thinking, I want this, or I could be helpful over here, that's a sneaky one. A lot of people fall for that one. I could be helpful over here. That's your desire to be helpful. That's not the same as a desire to awaken, right? So if you can just really every day stay focused on that desire to awaken is going to lead you in a straight line. I call it my true north. But if you start forgetting that that's what you want the most and start thinking you want other things, you're probably going to be led astray. You will never be asked to take a single step alone, but you must always be willing to take the lead by deciding the purpose and calling it out to us. Why do you hear Holy Spirit, Francine? Because you want to awaken. You see, you know, why does a person receive guidance, whether it's intuitive or it comes in some other way? Because they want to awaken. Why do people see the thoughts in their mind that need to be let go? Because they want to awaken. Why are people able to rest, accept, and trust with guilt or fear or unworthiness, you know, which is really uncomfortable? Because they want to awaken. Wanting to awaken enables everything else. If you forget, that's why you're in the lead, because you're the one that's deciding, I want to awaken. Mm-hmm. If you forget that you want to awaken, then all of those other tools don't come to you, because those tools, both the manifest and the unmanifest tools, they're coming in response to your call. So it's your job to keep making the call, to keep saying, I want to awaken, I want to awaken. And if you keep saying that, especially if you can say it from the heart, then everything you need is going to show up. And that's the end of NTI Revelation Chapter 1. And we're done because my book won't turn any more pages. It is frozen. But that's enough today anyway, I think.
Yeah. The next one is long.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll get... Yeah, oh, is it? Well, we'll see. Some of these, maybe... Well, we'll see. We might get through it in 1 week. It's 3 pages. But definitely won't even attempt it tonight. So we need an assignment then. So there were a couple of different things I heard in this that we could use as assignments, or maybe you heard something else. But one thing I heard is every time that we're tempted to think of ourselves as something other than I am, yeah, just to kind of say to myself, I am the Alpha and the Omega.
That's what I heard too.
Yeah, and just kind of hold on to that as a mantra. The other would be focusing on our, just really focusing on our true desire. So you like the Alpha and Omega, Francine?
I like both of them.
You like both? How the rest of you guys?
I think that's a new one.
Oh, that's a new one. Yeah, we focus on the true desire a lot.
Yeah.
We still need to.
Right.
But we've had that assignment before. So why don't we, every time that we notice that we're thinking of ourselves as something other than, whether it's a victim or an old lady or a talented chef or, you know, whatever, let's just say quietly to ourselves, I am the Alpha and the Omega. And just bring that memory back.
What I can tend to do is, okay, I'll try something in the morning to wear, and I'll say, that doesn't look good. I'll put that away, take something else. And that's focusing on the body.
Focusing on the body.
So I gotta...
You know, the very first things when I was guided into surrender, the very first things I was asked to let go of is picking out what I would wear and what I would eat.
Yeah.
Those are the two first things I was asked to let go of. And other people were saying, Holy Spirit wouldn't tell you what to wear. Yeah, Holy Spirit will, because otherwise, what is? Your ego.
Yeah.
You
right,
know?
Right.
So,
what to wear
and what to eat is asked to quit. And so one practice that I have, like when I go to a restaurant, I scan the menu, but usually something kind of, I don't know how to say it, like jumps out at me, and then I just stop and say, I'm getting this. And I don't think about, do I want this or not? You know, I just say, that's it. That's what was, and I'm getting that. So in my own way, I quit thinking about what I'm going to eat, at least somewhat. I mean, occasionally it still happens. But like I'll go home and I'll open the refrigerator and then it's like this. I mean, they kind of pop. I don't know how else to say that. They pop. And so in that way, I'm not choosing what I eat. I'm eating what was chosen for me. And clothes the same way. I walk in the closet and something kind of, there, I'll take that. You know, it just, and I put it on. So, yeah.
Yeah, you had to give up coffee for a year.
I had to
give up. You were guided to give up coffee.
Yeah.
And you were guided to be a vegetarian for a year.
And no alcohol that year either. I had no alcohol, no caffeine, and no meat for a year.
The same year?
Uh-huh, same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For a whole year, I didn't do any of those things, except there was one time about halfway through when this very strong, it wasn't like a craving, it was like a sense to have a hamburger came. And so I had one hamburger halfway through through that year. And I really felt that I was to have that hamburger. I must have needed something that was in it. But
and during that time, you were cooking meat for
everyone else. I had lots of guests at my house. I was cooking meat for everyone and then cooking something different for me.
Yeah. And it didn't entice you or...
No, in fact, that's one way that I always know that it's guidance, is because guidance not only gives me the guidance, but it gives me the ability to follow the guidance. So like I've only fasted twice in my life. We had a conversation about fasting a couple days ago in Francine's class. But I've only fasted twice. I fasted for, I think it was 7 days. I don't remember. One was 7 and one was 3. I don't remember which was which. But I fasted before going to Israel, and I fasted before going to India. Now, neither fast was a complete fast. The one before Israel was, somebody told me it was a Muslim fast, although I don't know what a Muslim fast is, but that's how he defined it. But what would happen is I would go to bed, and then I'd wake up around midnight or so with a thought to eat a certain thing, like half an apple. I mean, something very small, but and I couldn't go back to sleep until I got up and ate that thing. And it was very specific every night. So that may have been the 7 days. I don't remember. Forget, I don't remember details, no sense in even trying to make them up. But so I ate something very tiny in the middle of the night, every night during that fast. And then the other fast, I guess in a way it wasn't a fast. I think I had one thing three times a day. It seems like I had yogurt for breakfast, V8 for lunch. Oh, no, and then I had rice with milk at dinner. And that one I did, I think, for, that might even have been 2 weeks, but I did that for a while. But what was interesting, both of those, you know, semi-fasts, I guess you could call them, there was no temptation to cheat. It wasn't difficult at all sticking with the fast. I mean, and I was even, like, during the Muslim fast, I was mowing the lawn, pulling weeds. I didn't feel at all weak. So anytime in my life, when I've received guidance to do something, I've also been given the ability to do it. And I think what happens for a lot of people, and this is only a guess because I don't live in them, but I think what happens for a lot of people is they get the ideas. I'm going to fast. And then it's very, very hard for them because it's, you know, they don't have the support of the guidance that's helping them to fast. Also, people ask me, well, why? Why would you be guided to fast before going to Israel and before going to India? I don't know. I mean, obviously, both of those trips, my very first one to Israel, my very first one to India, were, you know, kind of holy pilgrimages. So, but I don't know why. You know, and usually if you can rattle off a lot of reasons why you're doing something, that's you too. You know, when you're guided to do something, you don't know why. You just know that you are. But Spirit doesn't sit down and tell you five or six reasons why you're going to do it. Same thing, you know, I was joking with Danielle today because, gosh, it's been a couple years now since we received the guidance to start a church, turn Foundation for the Holy Spirit into Awakening Together. And people have asked me a lot of times, why? Like, I don't know. And just now I said, maybe I'm starting to get a glimpse because as I'm filling out this Form 990, I'm noticing some of the questions that it asks. And there are things that really, as a 501c3, we really shouldn't do. That maybe it's in our heart to do, and as a church we can. And so I'm starting to say, oh, maybe there are reasons to become a church. You know, like one particular organization has asked for some money to help them with their ministry, and I think we would love to help them with their ministry, but they're not a 501c3. And see, 501c3s can only give money to 501c3s, but a church can give money to anybody they feel in their heart to. So we would be freer to follow our heart if we were a church, then we are as a 501c3. But I only learned that in the last week, and we've been on this road for 2 years. Holy Spirit didn't tell me you're going to become a church because, and I don't even know that's the reason. I just started noticing this week, oh, that's something we won't have to worry about once we're a church. Oh, there's something else we won't have to worry about once we're a church, and I'm starting to see that there are some conveniences there. But Holy Spirit didn't give me a single solitary reason, just, you know, start the church. So, guidance usually is very subtle, and it doesn't have a story. And the reason most people don't listen to it is because then the ego comes very loud with lots of stories, and they listen to the ego and its many, many stories instead of listen to the tiny, subtle voice that didn't have a story. But if you can listen to the tiny, subtle voice or the tiny, subtle intuition that doesn't have a story, you're golden. Yeah, you'll be following guidance in everything. All right, so I will stop the recorder and we can have some silence.